Nipun and I have a dialogue, is meditation and medicine, these two words come from the same root in Latin. And so, meditation or medicine both mean paying attention. And when you pay attention to your body, it becomes medicine. And when you pay attention to your mind, spirit, inner world, it becomes meditation. And meditation is not only when you sit cross-legged, closed eyes, half an hour, 1 hour, every morning. That's a good practice every day. But that could extend throughout the day. Like Thich Nhat Hanh's teaching, here you have lots of quotes, mindful living. That's a paying attention to everything we do, from eating to sleeping, even sleep mindfully. Can you sleep mindfully? And everything, walking, talking, speaking, thinking, be aware of what the state of your mind. That's meditation. So meditation is 24 hours. It's a delightful occasion that Nipun wrote to me, and I have seen and met Nipun many times, so it's a great pleasure to be with you.
Pleasure.
Thank you for contacting me.
Thank you. Can you guys hear him okay? Yeah? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm having a harder time. What was that? No, I mean, it's fine. It's kind of nice, too. Thank you all. When I realized I was going to be here, I had emailed Satishi, and he lives in Devon.
Yeah.
And it's like, what are the odds? I have this one day that I'm here, and he's like, oh, I happen to have that one day that I'm there. And then we were going to meet, and then I was thinking that it would be rather selfish of me to kind of just take his time all by myself, which I would love to do. And I decided to practice some generosity. And we thought that we would just dialogue for just I'll prompt him with a couple of questions so we can hear some words from him. And then we'll do some dialogue with all of us. I think the way Trishna and I, all of us, intend this gathering, I don't think there's a, it's not like you're going to be inspired. We're going to inspire each other. This is a co-creative process. Whether you're cooking or cleaning or fixing this or holding the mic or listening, I mean, these are all just different roles. We are actually co-creating a space. I mean, we're all consumers and we're all producers, and that's sort of the mindset with which we hold this space. With that in mind, let me introduce Satish. In India, we have a suffix G as a sign of respect. Satish has had a remarkable journey, which I remember first reading this article. I think it was in Atni magazine. I haven't been able to find it again. Mm. And I was like, really? Is there a guy like that? I mean, he walked. It was in his at nine, he's selected as like a, you know, leader of this Jain community, this particular Jain community, and he's selected for whatever reasons. He becomes a monk, and at 18, usually you do all this work and you aspire to become a monk. He kind of became a monk, and then he says, actually, I need to go out and serve. And he then connects with Vinoba, and at one point he reads, let me see if I get the story right. Mm-hmm. I heard him share it in our living room in Santa Clara. And at one point he sees, reads the paper and sees Bertrand Russell, who was 90 at the time, who went to jail for standing for something. And he's like, oh my God, I'm 20 something and
standing for peace.
Standing for peace. Mm. And he's like, what do I stand for? Mm. You know, am I really, can I, and he's like, I got to do something. And he ends up walking all the way from India to United States, except for this Bering Strait. And it's, you know, do not try at home. And he did it without money, purely on the kindness of strangers. I mean, this is a story that I don't know how many people alive could tell you they've walked 8,000 miles in this way across all those different countries. And he became an ambassador for peace. He's editor of Resurgence magazine since 1970s. 73. And he has been a visionary behind Schumacher College. He's actually done a lot of things. I think millions of people know his work around the world. So it's a real honor that you would accept an invitation here to be amongst friends. And I would love to just share, I would love to invite you to share a little bit of your journey as the first question. I asked Trishna last night, because she read one of your articles because you were coming, and she's like, oh my God, he's really inspiring. Yeah. So I asked her, I wanted to get a different perspective on what question she would ask. Like, what stood out for you in reading about his journey? And she says, what stood out for me was, she grew up Jain, and she says, there was this idea that you graduate to become a monk and work on your inner transformation, like that's what you get to. And here was an example of someone who was chosen at a young age to be a leader of, you know, of a religious community. And he's at 18, you're saying that actually it is through service that I'm going to progress. Mm. And so I was wondering if you could share a little bit of your initial journey and ultimately how that led to your walk, but what is that process of going outside to go within, mm. as opposed to going within to go outside? Mm.
Thank you. as a Jain monk, and that was a wonderful foundation for my life, because in Jain studies, you learn about nonviolence, ahimsa. And nonviolence, not only not to kill animals or not to hit somebody, but nonviolence of mind, nonviolence of thought, nonviolence of speech, nonviolence to yourself. So there was a wonderful foundation. But it was very personal nonviolence. So at age 18, I was given a copy of Mahatma Gandhi's autobiography called My Experiments with Truth. And in this book, Mahatma Gandhi said, and he was very influenced by Jain. One of his great teacher was Srimad Raj Chandra. So Gandhi is a kind of Jain. His mother was Jain. And so he says that practicing spirituality in personal life is wonderful. But that's not enough. You don't have to forsake the world to practice nonviolence and spirituality. You have to be in the world and bring nonviolence, spirituality, ethics, all the kind of wonderful things that monks practice in personal life, in the world of politics, in the world of business, in the world of economics. Because not everybody can become a monk. And spirituality should not be exclusive to monks. It should be inclusive to everybody. We all need to live spiritually, not just the monks. So how do you bring spirituality in everyday life, in your business, in your politics, in your education, in your farming, in your cooking, whatever you do? And that was such an eye-opening message for me, is that, wow, spirituality in everyday life. I want to do that. And so Gandhi did. Gandhi brought spirituality and nonviolence into politics, into everything, as you know his story. And so I decided to not leave Jain principles, not leave Jain ideals or values, but to leave the Jain kind of institution, the format. And so I decided to bring myself into the world. And Mahatma Gandhi's other very important line, which I was inspired by, is that you cannot change the world. You can change yourself. Be the change that you want to see in the world. It's a very famous line of Mahatma Gandhi. But you can serve the world. And through service, the world may change. But do not think that you are the great leader and you will change the world. Change yourself and serve the world. And when you serve the world may change, may not change, You don't desire any results of your action. You just serve. Service itself is its own reward. And so, those were the two things, spirituality in everyday life and changing yourself and serving the world. Those were the kind of key points of Gandhi that I really felt as inspiring. And so I left the monkhood, joined sort of Gandhian ashram living, and how do you do politics or business or economics or farming spiritually? By changing your motivation. Why you do business that you do? Why you in politics you go that you go? You go not for your ego satisfaction, not for your kind of name, fame, status, power, control, money, wealth, nothing. As I said, you go in politics to serve. You go in business to serve. You do farming to serve. You do it with pleasure, not for status, not for power. By changing your motivation, you make your action spiritual. A prime minister can be a spiritual being if the prime minister is not there for ego, bubble of this self-centered ego. I am great and I want power. So everything can become spiritual. So by changing your motivation. So that was a kind of inspiration that led me to the rest of my life.
So you're so... You started with this remarkable first step. Right? It wasn't a first step, but in your early years of just going on this walking pilgrimage.
Yeah.
It's a very radical idea.
Yeah.
Right? To walk and to do it without money.
Yeah.
What inspired you to do it without money?
Yeah.
And money now increasingly is becoming a very dicey issue. And so what insights would you have around the role of money itself? Yeah. In that process of doing something like this without...
Yes. As Nipun said, I read one day, sitting in a cafe in Bangalore, that Bertrand Russell, at age 90, had been imprisoned because he was protesting against the nuclear weapons. And I was with a friend called E.P. Menon. So I said to my friend, look, read this. And he read. And I said, here is a man of 90 going to jail for peace in the world. What are we doing, young man here, 25, 26, drinking coffee? This is not right. We should do something for peace. So that was the inspiration. And we decided, it's a long story, I have written a book called No Destination. And so you might like to get a copy. But in a nutshell, we decided that let's go to four nuclear capitals of the world. Moscow, Paris, London, Washington, D.C. And protest against the bomb. And if you go by plane or car or train or any other means, nobody is going to take any notice. But if you walk these capitals, then it will be a media interest. It will be... interest to other people, universities, churches, mosques, public. And so let's walk. And having walked for 9 years as a Jain monk, walking was no big deal for me. And so we went to Sri Mama, who was our teacher, our mentor. We were working with him, and he was very happy. He said, I give you my blessings. But then he said, you are going for peace in the world. Wars begin in fear. Peace begins in trust. How do you show that you trust? How do you show that you are not only talking about peace, but being peace? One way to be peace is to go to these four nuclear capitals walking without any money. And it was a little bit of shock. I said, Vinoba, any money? I mean, sometimes you need a cup of tea or sometimes you need a little bit of... He said, not any money and have no fear. Universe will look after you. Have no fear. We don't know how you will be looked after. I don't know. But go without money. And so that was a wonderful idea and advice. And so I dropped all my money and my friend, the both of us, and we started from the grave of Mahatma Gandhi, and we went through India first. And when we came at the border of India and Pakistan, the first time we are leaving India and going into Pakistan. And that is the last day in India. So all our friends and supporters and colleagues and family members all came to say goodbye. And one of my very dear friend, Kranti, her name was Kranti, she said, "Satish, aren't you crazy? You are going to Pakistan, our enemy country? We had three wars between India and Pakistan over Kashmir. And you are going without money, without food, but are walking. What about your safety? At least you take some food with you." She wanted to give us money as well, but at least take some food with you. Packets of delicious food smelling. But I remembered Vinoba. And I said to her, "That these packets of food are not packets of food. They are packets of mistrust. What am I going to say to Pakistani hosts and people that I did not trust whether you will feed us or not? So we have brought our own food all the way from India." She started to cry. I said, "Kranti, why are you crying? You are not going. I'm going. And you are crying." He said, "Satish, this might be our last meeting. Because we are going with Muslim countries, Christian countries, capitalist countries, communist countries, mountains, deserts, forests, wilds, everything, walking without money and without food. I don't know if I'll see you again." I said, "Kranti, Vinoba has said the fear you have to drop. And so I'm dropping my fear of death. If I die while walking for peace, that's the best kind of death that I can have. And if I don't get food, I'll say this is my opportunity to fast. My mother used to do a Thai. We can do a Thai. 8 days without eating, and mother was fine. And so that'll be an opportunity to fast. And if I don't have shelter to sleep, I'll sleep under the stars. And I'll call it a million star hotel." So that's how I went for 2.5 years through all those countries, unknown languages, unknown people, don't know what is going to happen tonight. Whether I will get food tonight, whether I'll get shelter tonight. Every day, not one day, not 2 days, for 2.5 years, totally dependent on other people, but totally spontaneous. Everything, what in modern science they say, emergence. It was emergence. Hospitality was an emergence property. And so, but every day, more or less, I mean, there were a few days when I went hungry, fasting. There were a few days when I slept under the Million Star Hotel. There were a few days when I faced a bullet. There were a few days when people did not give me shelter. All those difficulties were fine. And those difficulties made me even stronger. I welcomed difficulties. I said, if I was old with lots of money and staying in hotels and everything was fine, that will not be the adventure. Working for peace is that adventure, that taking risk and living in faith and peace and trust. That is the greatest. So I walked around the world. And I met Bertrand Russell, I met Martin Luther King, I went to the White House, I went to the Kremlin, I went to 10 Downing Street, newspapers, media, everywhere. It was amazing. It was wonderful to do that without money. When you have money, nothing. I mean, it's too safe, too easy, too cushioned. But when you have no money and you can live, because you don't need money to have air. But without air, we cannot live for 1 minute or 1 10 minute. But it's free. Water is free. I mean, you don't have to buy water in the bottle. Rain water is free. So air, water, soil is free. Soil is out giving us food. Food is not coming from Tesco or Sainsbury or big companies. They are only a medium. Food comes from the soil. And soil doesn't say you have to pay with your Visa card or credit card or something. Yeah. So life, when I was born, I did not have PhD. I did not have a job. I did not have any education. How did universe put that delicious, nourishing milk in the breast of my mother? Out of blue. Before my birth, there was no milk. At the moment I was born, there was milk. Where did it come from? So universe provides everything. We have to trust the universe, and we have to trust our imagination. We have to trust our creativity. We have to trust our hands. We put our seed in the ground. We have to serve the earth. We have to serve each other. Mother looks after you. You look after the mother. Your wife looks after you. You look after your wife. You look after each other. Man is only a kind of little medium of exchange. So I was just saying to Atul and to Sudhir in the car, I said, money should have a sell-by date. Like your credit card has expiry date, your check has expiry date. After 1 year, your check is no longer valid. So money should not be permanent value. There should be an expiry date. After 10 years, that particular amount of money is defunct. If you have not used it, then why are you holding it? Money is only to flow. Just use it, spend it. And you have made new money, but not old money, like new credit card, new Visa card. So money should have a sell-by date. And you can live without money. You can, if you live simple life.
What was really curious and interesting is how Vinoba responded. After you did all this, you visited heads of state, you went to White House and Downing Street, and then you go back to your teacher who had given you this idea, this Gandhian, who had given you this idea of not going with money. What was his response and what was the learning there?
I mean, he was delighted, and even Kranti, when I arrived back in India, Kranti came to meet me on the port in Mumbai, and she was delighted. And Vinoba was very delighted. And he said that it's good that you went. Ultimately, you don't need to go anywhere to make peace in the world if you meditate on peace, and everybody meditate on peace wherever they are, and trust each other. There'll be no war. So Vinoba's idea is that this idea of division, that you are separate from somebody else, is the cause of our fear. Fear comes because you are the other. Whereas if you have an idea of relationship, you are not the other. I wrote a book called You Are Therefore I Am, and I'm delighted that Thich Nhat Hanh has done a calligraphy of You Are Therefore I Am. If you, Vinoba's idea was that we are all related. And so this idea that American national interest is separate from the Russian national interest, or Indian national interest is different from Pakistani national interest, or Hindu national interest is different from Muslim national interest, or religious interest, or any other, this separation is the cause of fear. If you want no fear, then you have to say we are all related. We are one humanity. Whether you are American or Russian or Buddhist or Hindu or Jain or Muslim or black or white, under the skin you have a red blood. We are all red-blooded. We are all one. We are all members of human community, and ultimately we are members of earth community. So that was Vinoba's response, that the peace comes from trust and dropping fear. And the trust comes when you say we are all one, unity of life, and then manifesting that unity in millions of forms and faces and shapes and so on. So diversity is complementary to unity, or you can say unity dances through diversity. So diversity should not be perceived as division. Diversity should be perceived as a dance of unity, and celebration of diversity. So it's wonderful to have many languages, many nations, many colors, many religions, many philosophies. That's a kind of Jain idea of anekantavad. Anekant meaning no one truth. Truth diversity. Like biodiversity, cultural diversity, religious diversity, linguistic diversity, even truth diversity. There's no one single truth which I can hold and say, this is my truth and this is the only truth. We have your own truth, everybody has their truth. Perceive our common ground is nonviolence. You can have your own truth, but nonviolence is common ground. You do no harm to me and I do no harm to you. That's our common ground. If we can have that common ground without fear and trust, then we can have peace in the world. But this separation causes fear.
I'll ask one last question and then open it up to all of you. Do you think, if you look at the world today, and you look at the tremendous poverty and the tremendous amount of strife and suffering that people are facing, how do you stay hopeful in such a world? How do you stay true to this idea of unity over separation when everything is systemically designed to create that separation? Politicians separate because they want to get elected, because people are, they like that kind of a narrow story, right? I mean, and you can draw that narrative across every single sector. So in presence of that, in presence of the ripples of suffering that causes, how do you stay grounded in a kind of optimism? Because your being is all, you're optimistic, and there's a lot of people who do this work that end up going on the other side, burning out and things. Yeah. And you're 79, you had an event yesterday, you're still here today, and instead of just having a quiet lunch with me, you're opting to do that. So what is the source of your optimism, of your regenerate? Clearly there's some regenerative thing where science is telling us, oh, there's this thing called empathy fatigue and compassion fatigue. And it seems to me that you're coming from a space which is a little bit different or significantly different. Can you shed some light on that?
Yes. First of all, we need to have a perspective. And the perspective is that, yes, there's a war. But out of 7 billion people on this earth, how many people are engaged in war? 1 million, 2 million, 5 million, 10 million, 20 million? Even not that. The other 6 billion people on the earth are not at war. They are farming. They are making pots, they are building houses, they are looking after children, they are teaching, they are nursing, they are doctors, they are doing their business. They are living peacefully. So this idea that war is the only reality in the world is not reality. Because newspapers write about war and conflict doesn't mean that if you are looking at your life 24 hours a day. How many times, how many hours you are angry? And how many times and how many hours you are loving and caring and getting on with your life in a good way? Maybe 1 hour you are angry, or half an hour, or 2 hours. But what about 23 hours or 22 hours when you are loving and kind and compassionate and doing poetry or making pictures or cooking beautiful food or cleaning the house or walking somewhere or bicycling? We live more peacefully in the world. And so we have to have that perspective. Don't just believe the newspapers. Believe your own experience. So I would say that humanity at large is good. Humanity at large is spiritual. Humanity at large is compassionate. And the lack of compassion, wars, conflicts, fights are aberration. Those are like, maybe I get sometimes headache, I get sometimes flu, I get sometimes tummy upset. That's the normal. Normal state of my being is healthy. Occasionally I get ill. So I don't say, oh, my life is all illness. No. occasionally I get ill, so there are healing processes. So you have reconciliation, you have a service, you have Mother Teresa, you have Mahatma Gandhi, you have Martin Luther King, you have Nelson Mandela. These are doctors, healers. Buddha, Jesus Christ, St. Francis, Pope is the good news. Pope is the good news. Yes. And in Britain, Jeremy Corbyn is the good news. In the United States, Saunders, what's his name?
Bernie
Saunders. He's a good news. And there are people who are serving the society, who are taking care of the poor. They're working for transformation, working for holistic health, working for environment, working for Friends of the Earth, Greenpeace, WWF. People are living without money. Service. Service is there, like doctors healing. So we have healers, and we need healers all the time. We can never have utopia when you can say, like in our body, you cannot guarantee that you will never fall ill, or you will never have headache, or you will never have some a cold or cough or flu. That's part of natural being, but that is minority. The majority is we are spiritual beings, we are in good health, we look after each other, and if something goes wrong, we have doctors, we have healers, we have servants like Mahatma Gandhi, Mother Teresa, Nipun, and all of you, yeah, he is in that class because he's wonderful service to the world. So we need such healers all the time in the future. There's no time when you can say it's a utopia and all the problems are solved, there will be no war, no poverty, no illness. That is not possible. We are humans, and humans means dark and light go together, complementing each other. So negative and positive go together. So there will be problems in the world, we'll always be there to heal. We'll always be there to serve. We'll always be there to look after each other. We cannot guarantee that we're all peace ever in the world. But whenever there's a war, we will go there to bring reconciliation. We'll go there, serve the society. That keeps me optimistic. That keeps me energized. Until the last breath of my life, I will be there to serve. And then the new generation. Alex, he's a new leader. His action for happiness. And many of you, I don't know, I'm sure, many of you are engaged in the work of service. That is the source of optimism and source of enthusiasm and source of energy for me.
So weird. I feel like clapping, but I feel like...
I do it in silence. If you guys have questions, maybe just raise your hand. I could bring the mic, but maybe you can just say it and then I'll repeat it here just so it gets recorded. Yes.
Hi, thanks, Satish, for very wise words. One of the hidden wars is the war against culture and heritage and wisdom. How do we fight this war?
Yes.
How do we fight the war against culture, wisdom, and heritage?
Yes. It is a difficult question because, as Atul, you said, that we are under the tsunami of materialism. And this world kind of dominance where we are told that ego, greed, money, control, power, these are the kind of goals of human life. These are the aims. We have to aim for money, success, power, control. So this is a kind of tsunami of materialism. It's a real, real problem. Now, only way to deal with it is to work on a small scale. Sometimes big problems need small solutions. We cannot overnight turn around and say globalization will come to an end. But we can start small projects, and many small projects can gather together and create a new energy. And so our challenge at this time is to create positive, constructive projects where people are engaged. And when people, even in the mainstream society, see that there are alternatives, and there are alternatives already starting. In Britain, there are farmers' markets, there are small communities, there are some permaculture projects, there are some crafts, there are some fair trade, there are many good projects are starting. And so we need to encourage them. We need to promote them. We need to support them. So there are not just a few exceptional examples of idealistic individuals doing some good thing, but it becomes much more mainstream. And when the grassroots has changed, then the top cannot be sustained. The top is sustained only because of the grassroots. People are voting with their feet and supporting those big institutions, big materialism, and the lack of culture. And there's a difference between civilization and culture. Culture word originally used to be connected with the soil, cultivating, agriculture, cultivating the soil. That was original. If you read your Oxford Dictionary or somewhere, you will see it's a culture was with soil. And then civilization came with the civic, which is the city. So if you, what happened is that culture became backward. If you are agriculturist, if you are living on the land, cultivating the land, you are undeveloped. You are backward. If you come and live in the city, London, New York, Mumbai, and have money and don't make your hands dirty, because hands dirty, wash it with your soap. Dirt, dirty. But dirt is not dirty. Dirt is the source of the earth, source of the food, soil. And so the way to bring that culture back is all of us need to go back into nature. We need to walk in nature. We have to, if you have a little here, you could put some plants, some herbs, some beautiful sun there. You can grow something even in a city like London. Or you can have an allotment. And so if you want to go to culture, then you need to touch the soil and be connected with nature, with the environment. And then culture came, like you cultivate the soil, you also cultivate the soul. And to cultivate the soul, you need meditation, you need music, you need art, you need poetry, you need dance, you need something which is beyond material possessions and accumulation of goods and stuff. And so cultivating your soul, cultivating your imagination, that's a kind of corollary from cultivating the soil. So if we, more and more people, say, I'm not going to work 5 days a week. I'm not going to go from 8 a.m. To a bank and work in the city until 8 p.m. Because lots of people in the city and in banks work from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., 12 hours. I'm going to negotiate with my employers. I'm going to work only 3 days a week, or 2 days a week, or 4 days a week, whatever suits you. Why we should have only Saturday, Sunday? Not many people even don't work on Saturday, don't have a free time on Saturday or Sunday. So have 3 days weekend, 4 day weekend, and have that time for your own arts, crafts, music, poetry, meditation, spirituality, family, friendship, gardening, walking, so that you can live a human life. That is a way to answer the globalization problem, the tsunami of materialism. If we do not change ourselves, we cannot change the world. That's what Mahatma Gandhi said. So we have to be who we really want to be. Be human beings, and not just human doings, or human havings, but human beings. That's the answer to your question. Next one. Yeah.
No, it's a of life.
Yes. Yes.
Hopefully go and help children in poverty. That's something that I've been inspired to do. And occasionally, over the last few months, once I made this decision to do this, you know, I've worked in the high-tech industry for nearly 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And,
spend to help my children and myself.
Mm.
And I find myself getting fearful sometimes about the decision and the choice that I've made, in that I'm thinking, how on earth am I going to live for the rest of my life? Because if my plan is, this is going to be the rest of my life, how am I going to live without earning any money? And I don't know, I'm going to give it a go, but I wonder how you managed to really get around that fear, or what advice potentially you could give me, that when I dwell on that fear, you know, I know it's not real, but sometimes it feels very real to me.
Yeah, you are going to live the rest of your life beautifully and well by giving yourself to Peru or to society or to community in whatever way. When you give yourself, the universe works from reciprocity. Everything is reciprocal. When you give, you receive. So just give. Give your time, give your love, give your talent, give your hands, give your work, whatever you have. And in your body, you have everything. There's nothing you lack. Fear comes when you feel that, oh, I lack something. You don't lack anything. You are a Gandhi. You are a Jesus Christ. You are a Shakespeare. You are a Picasso. You are anything you want to be. You have potential. Your consciousness, your imagination, your creativity is boundless. There's no limit to it. So why are you worried? Just go to Peru, put yourself in the service of the people, and they will look after you. They will look after you. Have no fear. Universe has produced you here in this little body of 5 foot or 6 foot or whatever. In this little body, universe has put the entire universe in you. In you. You have the sun, you have the moon, you have the stars, you have the imagination, you have the spirituality, you have the creativity, you have nothing lacks. Why are you afraid? You don't need money. If you needed money, universe would have put it in your body. But you need imagination, you need love, you need compassion, you need creativity, and you have it all. Just use them. Give yourself in the service of humanity and the people and earth will give you back. Humanity will give you back. How did Jesus live? How did Buddha live? Buddha was an emperor. He had palaces, he had elephants, he had servants, he had everything. But he gave up everything. And he went to Peru, metaphorically speaking. So you are like, living in England is like emperor. You have house, you have money, you have cars, you have like, you have everything here. You are giving up like the Buddha and going to forest. Go. Don't worry. All will be well. Yeah. Yes.
Does fear give us any gifts?
You need a bit of fear. When fear becomes overwhelming and controlling you, then it becomes a problem. But a little bit of cautiousness, a little bit of awareness, it's like salt and pepper on your food. You need a bit of caution. So my formula, it's not so much fear, but living in the present moment gives you less fear. So have about 10% of your life, thinking and living in the past. Only about 10%, approximately. And maybe 15% in the future. A bit of planning, a bit of where you are going, what you are going to do, a little bit of planning. But 75% of your attention, this is why I said in the beginning, meditation is to pay attention in the present moment. So 75% of your time and your attention and your presence should be in the present moment. Present is the greatest present that you can have. And this is why it's called present. So Live now, and that will reduce your fear. Fear is when you are thinking a lot on the future. I say, how am I going to survive? How, if I get ill, how will it happen? I have to have insurance. If I lose this or lose a job, or all that fear is in the future. The present moment, very little fear. So a little bit of salt and pepper is okay, but don't be overwhelmed by it. Anyone else? Yes, please.
I was thinking about the people undernourished, underfed, dying from hunger. I subscribe to National Geographic, and there was research there that the population at the moment is around 7 billion, but the food that there is in the world is enough to feed 9 billion. So, what is going on?
One is selfishness. We are all just concerned about ourselves and we don't think. The other is waste. If you take waste, how much food is wasted in Britain? We have food banks where people don't have food, so they go to food banks. But huge amount of food is wasted in our refrigerators, in our freezers, in supermarkets where sell-by date is gone and therefore food is thrown away, in transportation. So waste is a big problem. And a lack of organization, lack of compassion is the other problem. Because when you become selfish, you are more compassionate. When you have compassion, then you share. So National Geographic is absolutely right. There's no lack of food. It's a lack of organization. And therefore, each and every one of us individually, we have to say, I will not waste any food. I will not waste food in my refrigerator and freezer. In my childhood, every day we went to, I mean, we also had some of our own land, and we grew fruit and many things in our land. But if we needed vegetables, every morning we'll go to this market, farmers market type of market, and buy fresh vegetables which were picked that morning, and bring it and cook it that day. And next day is a fresh vegetable for next day. Today, wrapped everything, plastic, put it in the freezer, electricity is being wasted, and that food goes waste because it's not fresh and we don't like it, throw it away. So I think our organization is a culprit, and waste is culprit, and then selfishness, not caring for others, is culprit. So we need to start changing our own personal lives and then share that concern with others, communicate that concern with others, and other people, by your example, will also be influenced and will waste less. And then food is left to be shared. That's how we can do it.
We have a question there.
I'm very interested in kind of the role that technology has to play in our culture.
Yeah.
When you talk about nature and the need to connect with nature, I feel like there's a very human aspect to that often gets lost in the obsession with scalability and having these global processes that technology allows us to have, right? Mm. So you talk about, wrapping food up and sticking it in the fridge, right? That electricity has come from a power station somewhere really far away. That fridge was made in China.
Yeah.
The food was produced somewhere else and then wrapped up by someone else and then brought to my fridge.
So yeah.
This is all about these massive scalable kind of processes, right?
Yeah.
And technologies. And so that's very antithetical to what I think is relevant to our humanness and our happiness, which is much more around micro community, right? We weren't really meant to be connecting with people across the world simultaneously while we sat next to other people and more of them.
Mm.
Right? Just given the obsession that technology has with achieving scalability, right? How do we flip that on its head and use it? Because we have food for 9 billion people, as someone said, right? Technology helps us get to that point. But how does it also to change its focus on helping us solve within micro communities instead of solving at this global level. Because I think you can solve metro-sized problems at the global level, but you kind of lose who you are and what makes you happy in that micro community space because you're not in that micro community.
And it's a big, very big question. And I think in your question, there's an answer. You talked about micro community. Our tendency is to make things complicated. Whereas sometimes simple answers are the real answers. But we somehow have this human tendency in modern times to make things complicated. So the real genius is to make things simple. And as simple as you said yourself, in a micro community, if we had smaller scale and our cities were slightly redesigned where nature and culture were not alienated from each other, and the nature was not into exile, but nature was in the city, and we could also grow our food, and we could walk to our workplace, and we could live a more healthy and micro community lifestyle, rather than importing food from thousands of miles away. So that caring of micro community, creating that micro community, needs a new awareness. At the moment, our minds are conditioned. We are brainwashed to think that technology will solve all the problems. Globalization will solve all the problems. Somebody will solve the problem. Big company will solve the problems. This kind of brainwashing has been going on. And our education teaches us that as well. The media does the same thing. Government does the same thing. So we need to shift that conditioning of the mind, this brainwashing, and say, globalization or the big corporations, the multinationals, the transnationals, they are not going to solve the problems. We have to create our own micro communities where we can live simple but elegant lifestyle. Elegant simplicity. Simplicity does not mean you have to have starvation or hunger or the kind of misery or no community or no food or no clothes. No, no. You make something beautifully, but elegant simplicity at a micro community level. We can create that, and we can redesign our cities to bring nature back into the cities. And also around the city, within say 30, 40 mile radius of London, there should be food, milk, butter, grain, vegetables, fruit, whatever we can grow, that should come like Covent Garden Market used to have 50 years ago, when local farmers brought the food in the morning, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning, everything came, people then took from there. So that could be restored, that was there. It's only about last 20, 30 years that we have become so globalized that local markets and micro communities have become destroyed. So we can restore them back. This kind of system is only about at most 100, 200 years old, this kind of very civilized, urbanized, and globalization is even shorter. So it's a human-made system. And as John F. Kennedy said, what is made by humans can be changed by humans. So we need to take power back in our hands. And we need to say, it's not going to be somebody else doing the solution of the problem. I'm going to be the leader. You are the leader. Each and every one of us are the leaders. We can begin to create a new form of life, which is more sustainable, more enjoyable, more elegant, more simple, more complicated, and less wasteful. Waste of energy, waste of electricity, waste of food, waste of many, many good things that we have. We waste them. We can create a new life. Yes?
Go ahead.
I'm so enjoyed listening to you.
Say again,
I'm so enjoyed listening to you.
Yeah.
He's enjoyed listening to you.
Yes.
Just brought by something you said, which was this aspect of cultivating the soul.
Yeah.
You talked about certain activities, interests, you talked about being with nature, music, poetry,
yeah.
Film expression.
Yeah.
The work I do in the city is to do with creating the condition for people to slow down and stop and be still. And what I find almost with regularity, almost with a clinical certainty that the one door that people don't open is to do with
of dawn of
intimacy.
Intimacy, yeah. Yeah.
And so, of course, there is vipassana, which is an external forced discipline. And there is mindfulness that's now in vogue. And there's also a certain, there's a certain position about it. But the inherent naturalness of intimacy, which has been suppressed over ages through religion. The Buddha was a prince, and of course, he kind of transcended. And so was Mahavir and many others who walked that path.
Mm.
But for the common man, the man who's fighting and who's paying a mortgage and who has family and who has children. Curiosity and ignorance and guilt and shame and pain are day-to-day things.
Mm.
So sitting silently eventually raises up even more pain.
Mm.
So I wonder, what is your guidance and perspective that you can share?
I think you have touched upon a very beautiful word. Intimacy. And at the moment in our society, we are living such a life where very little time for intimacy. Even we don't see our children so much as we need to or should be seeing. Even we don't see our beloved husband or wife as much as we need to see them. We don't see our parents, which are intimate family relationships. Friendship, we meet for dinner or something like that, but not enough. So if we can restore intimacy, then I think many of our alienation, depression, mental problems, breakdown of families, breakdown of marriages, all those things can be addressed. If we can develop intimacy. So, to have intimacy, you need time. This is why I think our society at the moment is so work-oriented. And that work is not real work, but it's a work just to get money. Sitting behind a computer, behind a desk, just kind of paperwork. That's not real work, but it brings you money. And so, we have become kind of work slaves. And we have so much work from morning to evening, 5 days a week, 6 days a week, that we have no time for intimacy. And so we have become money rich, but time poor, and time poverty leads to intimacy poverty. So we are poor in our relationships. And so you have touched on a very important subject, intimacy. We need. And we don't have time for ourselves. There's no intimacy to our own self. We are always externally oriented. Work. One more work. One more telephone call. One more email. One more this. One more that. Outside, outside. Forgotten our own intimacy to be intimate to ourselves. Where is time for your own walk? Or have a nice meal with your wife or husband? Or a little play with your child? And just be happy and contented within yourself. Do a bit of yoga, meditation, read a book, even a beautiful novel like Siddhartha. Have you read the Siddhartha novel? Beautiful novel. So something which is inspiring, time for yourself. Holiday should become a holy day and not just a kind of a week away from bank and then come back to it. And even there, you have an iPad or an iPhone or something. So that intimacy is destroyed by this very busy work slavery almost. We are, lots of us are so glorified slaves of work. No?
Is it possible that because there is no intimacy, there is an intentional work?
Well,
I would say the other way around. There is too much work and attention to success, external success, and power, and status, so much attention there that we have lost intimacy. So we need to shift and a bit withdraw from this egotistical pursuit of more money, more power, bigger car, bigger house, bigger name, bigger status, whatever, fame, whatever you are seeking. We need to withdraw from there in order to have moment and space for intimacy. You don't need to do anything for intimacy, you just need to have a time. There's no other effort needed. But for success and power and fame and name and money and all those things, you need to do a lot of work. But for intimacy, just be. Just be yourself. Be. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
In the world of money. And for 15 years, I've been on a path of creating financial freedom.
Yeah.
Our children have gone and following their respective paths. Something you said about having a finite life, a finite time, after which that money becomes redundant or is to be spent, that resulted in a from my wife, so potentially I could be destitute after this. can you just give me a little bit of perspective on what you mean on you draw a line? I think I understand, but I'm just a little bit lost.
There is no fixed line which one can draw for everybody. You have to have question to your heart and say, what is my line? Where should I draw my line? Each and every one of us have different circumstances. You cannot make one rule for everybody. But have you got time to ask that question to yourself? That's the point I'm making. Ask yourself, in your meditation, ask, what is it that I want? Who am I? Who am I? What do I really want? Do I want love or I want work? Do I want compassion or want money? Am I a CEO of a big company or am I a human being? Who am I? Who am I? Ask that question. What is my line? You have your own heart and your heart is wise. There's a wisdom within you, innate wisdom. And that will become the answer. Your inner, still inner voice is the real guide. Your inner guru is the real guru. Guru is not outside. Each candle has a light within it. Just do a little matches and the light will be lit there in the candle. So your own candle, you have to ask that question, what is my line? Who am I? What is my purpose? What is my meaning? How am I to want to live? Do I want more name, more fame, more power, more position, more money, more house, more car, more computer, more this, more that? Or I want peace, quiet, relationship, family, friends. But of course we all have to work. But what is the limit? How much you want to work? What kind of work you want to do? Do only what you love doing. That's your touchstone. Only do what you love doing. Or love whatever you are doing. If you don't love it, give it away. Don't fear. Give it up. If you don't love doing what you are doing, your human life is so precious. You are wasting being something which you don't love doing. I'm talking to you now. I love talking. I'm talking. I love meeting you. If I didn't like it, I'd walk away. So don't do anything which you don't love and enjoy doing. Do everything with pleasure. When you make a cup of tea for me, do it with pleasure. And I will. When I thank you, you are likely to say, I did it with pleasure. Won't you? So do whatever you are doing with pleasure. Enjoy it. Ananda is the Sanskrit word for it. Ananda. Ultimate Sat Chit Ananda. The Ananda is the ultimate third word. Shivananda, Yogananda, Muktananda, everybody gets Ananda at the end of their name when you become a spiritual person. Why you do yoga? Don't do yoga if you know Ananda in it. Even yoga is no good without Ananda. So yoga has to be Ananda, Yogananda. So ask yourself. Nobody else can answer you. Your inner guru is within you. Your inner voice is within you. And you get the answer, your wisdom. And then decide your life. And live your life according to your own wisdom, not according to some guru or some famous Krishnamurti or Shivananda or Satish Kumar or none. Your own guru, your inner guru. Ask that question and you will find the answer.
I have a feeling he's going to sing later today. He loves to sing. Yeah, go ahead. Okay. Over there.
I'm not really sure.
Yeah, good. Fine, yeah. Share, yeah.
So as a 22-year-old, I have a vision of my life to live a very fulfilled life and be at the service of others. But at the other, on the other side, I have a vision of a career and making money, and that side of it as well. So I guess the question is, is there a balance which I can keep, which will allow me to fulfill both of those journeys? And is there a set line, or is that something that only I can decide? And so it's just a confusing space, because on one side there's a lot of pressure on your career and your business and things like that, but on the other side there's the spiritual journey. So is that something you can combine, or is that something that you have to keep separate? Or
no separation, you can combine. But as I said in the very beginning of the talk, that do your business to serve. Not for your own career, but to serve. And while you are doing business to serve, money is coming. Money is only a means to an end. So do not do to make money anything. Your the purpose of your life is not to build a career. What is career? You become CEO, so what? There are thousands and hundreds of thousands of CEOs in the world. So what? You are a unique being. You are a very special being. What is your speciality in this world which nobody else has? Bring that out. There's only one Picasso. There's only one Shakespeare. There's only, what's your name?
Ashish.
There's only one Ashish. Be Ashish. Be yourself. And then money is your servant. Money comes. There's no, I'm not against money. You provide me, but I'm not against money. I'm against you focusing on money rather than yourself. So let the money come to serve you, but you don't serve money. Let the money come if it wants to come. But you are here to do something greater, higher. 22, wonderful life in front of you. Just be something which your children and the history can say, Ashish did that. Wonderful. Ashish's work. He built a cathedral. Cathedral is a metaphor. Some kind of building. Build a cathedral, metaphorically. Do something, and then money will pour. There's no shortage of money in the world. Billions and billions of dollars and pounds are going around the world without any purpose. They're looking for something good to do. There's no shortage of money. Money is only an idea. Money is only a figure on the in the bank account. Money is only a figure on the computer screen. There's nothing real about money. It's real about you. You have body, you have hands, you have imagination, you have mind, you have soul, you have spirit, you have a love, you have a compassion, you have a relationship, you have everything. You are forgetting all that, and you are looking for some career. Somebody will call you CEO, or somebody will call you director, or somebody will call you president or chairman. What is that? Just a new word. You are more important than anything else. So take care of yourself and offer yourself in the service of the earth and the humanity, so that earth and humanity remembers you forever. Be a Buddha. You are a Buddha. Be a Gandhi. Be a Shakespeare. Be a cathedral builder. You have potential. Your consciousness is a potential. That potential is some buried. Unfold that potential. Unleash that potential. You are amazing. Every one of you. There's a saying in India, given by Kumara Swami, that an artist is not a special kind of person, but every person is a special kind of artist. So you are an artist. You are a poet. Poet is not only somebody who puts beautiful words on a page. Poet, poesis. The word poesis means to make. Whatever you make, if you make with imagination, with creativity, with your heart, with your love, with your presence, anything you do is poetry. So be a poet, be an artist, be a cathedral builder, be something who you are. And the money will flow. There's no shortage of money. For Mahatma Gandhi, there was no shortage of money, even though he lived in a hut. Birla was writing checks for him. So money will come. I've never had any shortage of money. I went around the world. Say, you want to go around the world? You can say, oh, I have no money. How can I go around the world? You don't need to go to need money to go around the world. You need imagination. You need courage. You need determination. Cultivate those qualities. Money will be at your service, at your feet. Millions and millions will come to you. How did all the great sadhus get temples built? Nishdham temple built. Where did money come from? Volunteers. People come behind you. I want to do something. So there will be no shortage of money. But don't go for it. Money should be a shadow following you, not for you following your shadow.
That's great. I think we'll have time for maybe one or two last questions.
Yes.
One we'll go here and there.
Yeah.
And okay. Then we'll conclude.
This idea of one service being better than another service, you know, like almost like a hierarchy of, you know, this is what doing good means in the world, and so you should pursue that. And if you're not doing that, then it's not worth it. You know, if you're not, you know, I guess, young person, if you're not trying to create like a tech startup or something like that impact billions and create like the next Facebook, then don't start it. You know, it's pointless. So this idea of like hierarchy.
Now the thing is, there is no real hierarchy in service. The true service is the kind of service which speaks to your heart. What service you feel when you do, yes, this is what I want to do. Your heart should speak to you. Nobody else can tell you, do this or do that. This is a better service than that one. Nobody. If your animals appeal to you, look after animals. If forests appeal to you, look after the forest. If the poor people appeal to you, go and work for the poor. If old and sick die and they appeal to you, go and work for the old and dying. If independence of a country like India, Mahatma Gandhi's appeal was that, go and work for the environment or for the independence or for political, whatever appeals to your heart. So you have to ask yourself, what is it which appeals to me? My heart speaks to me, and I feel good about it, and I enjoy it, and I don't feel any burden. Service should not be a burden. Service should not be forced. Service should emerge out of your compassion, out of your heart, out of your empathy, out of your love, that you don't want to do anything other than that. That is real service. There's no hierarchy. What you do, just do it. There is no hierarchy. Maybe that's the last question.
She's saying, if it's not natural, why is majority of the world doing this?
Yeah. And because of our conditioning of the mind. From the childhood, we are told, day after day, week after week, year after year, by our parents, and then by our society, and then education. From the age 5, to 20, nearly 15 years, you are pushed through a very narrow line that you have to pass the exams and get good degree, so you get a good job, so that you get good kind of salary, so you get a good pension, so that you die.
Narrow and straight line. We are conditioned. Conditioned. Mind is conditioned and brainwashed. So this is why everybody is just following the same path. You go to school, you go to university, you get a degree, you get a job, you get a pension, you get a few holidays, then you die. So the way to break out of it is for each and every individual to take control of their lives and say, I'm not going to follow the trodden path. I'm going to make my own path. I'm going to make my own life, how I want to live. And there are many, many good examples who have broken out of it. Many, many good examples. I mean, Krishnamurti was brought up from a childhood to be the prophet. And one day he realized, I don't want to be a prophet. I want to be an ordinary human being. And he renounced. I was brought up to be a monk. I could have lived there forever. But one day, matches from Mahatma Gandhi, but my own light came to me. I said, I don't want to be restricted in this monastic order. I want to bring this spirituality, this non-violence into the world. That's a true Jain idea for me. And so you or any one of us can have that moment when we can say, I'm going to be courageous and not going to follow the trodden path. That's all we can do. Because our conditioning of the mind is so strong. Media, education, parents, colleagues, peer group, everybody's telling you to be successful in terms of money, job, and career. That conditioning has to be broken. Okay, thank you very much for your good questions. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you.
We had a tentative hand kind of go up, and so I always try to pay attention to the tentative.
Okay,
just
okay,
to honor that.
Yeah, yeah, certainly.
Just follow on from that, but how, because there's fear in that as well, of taking your own path and not being on the trodden path.
Mm.
Because when the majority are potentially on that other path of success, career, money, etc., etc., then also at the cost of potential intimacy, because I'm so connected to friends, family, etc., and the attachments to people that are following the other path, it's a potential to feel lonely if you then go on your own trodden path, which is different to that majority. And how do you get over that? Like,
that's a fear. That's your fear that I might get isolated, and other people may not like me, and my parents may not like me, and my friends may not like me, and they might say, why are you doing this? You must follow the path. That's a fear. And the moment you do it, the moment you take your own path, parents will say, wow, what a daughter I have. Wonderful, amazing thing you are doing. You are doing such a wonderful thing. But they don't know what you are going to do. And so they want to see you safe. They want to see secured. They want to see that you have got a good life, you've got a good house, everything. They want safety. But you don't want safety. You want something courageous. You want something extraordinary. But they don't know it. So, and then you have fear that if I do something what I want to do, my parents won't like it, my husband won't like it, my children won't like it, my friends won't like it, so you don't do it. So that kind of fear imposes fear. And insecurity imposes fear. And so my advice would be, listen to your heart, do what you really want to do. I mean, in my case, my mother didn't like me going around the world. She didn't like it. She didn't like it.
What did she want?
she said, without money, she was very afraid. But I said, Mother, I'll be back. Don't worry. And then, when I came back, not when I came back, while I was on my journey, my guru, Acharya Tulsi, who was a Jain guru, he praised me to my mother. And said, it is amazing. Your son is really being a Jain sadhu. He's going on foot and without money, begging, like sadhus do. Isn't he amazing? Our sadhus don't go to America and Moscow and so on. And my mother said, wow, Is it my son who's being praised by my guru? And then she came to me. When I came back, I said, oh, you did a wonderful thing. But when I was beginning, she was afraid. Because she wanted security. She wanted me to get married, to have children, to have a house. Why am I going to this journey without money, walking? What is going to happen to it? So they are afraid. But you need to have your courage. And do what you want to do. And then the world will praise you. I guarantee it. You can, I can give you a written paper. I guarantee the world will praise you if you do what you really want to do with courage and imagination and creativity from your own heart.
It's beautiful.
And our father is here.
Yeah. Okay.
I have to conclude. Yeah. I'm going to give you one last question.
Okay.
Related to that.
Yeah.
And I think it's, I was looking at my cousin Simi over there, and she just became a mother.
Yes.
Of a wonderful young one named Ashleen.
Yeah.
What advice would you have for us?
A mother.
A mother, and ultimately I think we're all sort of mothers, birthing so many new possibilities.
Yes.
How do you think we can tend to that?
Yeah.
In a responsible way.
Yeah.
That supports us, that supports those around us, and supports society.
Yeah. First of all, I want to say, where is your friend? There.
My cousin Simi, yes.
Okay, Simi. First of all, I want to say that every mother is a hero. Bearing a child in your womb for 9 months, when I want to have a little suitcase in my hand, I want somebody to help me. You are carrying the baby. And then you go through that labor pain. Great sacred motherhood, sacrifice of the mother to bring that child into the world. It's a heroic, heroic journey, heroic act. Every mother, mothers are unsung heroes. You think, oh, every woman gives birth to a child, so what? It's not ordinary. It's extraordinary. And so, and we, whether you're a woman or man, we need to respect that. And say, don't think that giving birth to a child has to be in the newspapers or has to be praised or something. It don't need anything. Just my act of being a mother. And my mother was a hero. And I always, she was my great teacher. When you ask me, who was your great teacher? My Acharya Tulsi, or Vinoba Bhave, or Bertrand Russell, or Martin Luther King, or E.F. Schumacher, I would say my mother was the greatest teacher. Nobody gave me so much understanding and wisdom of the world as my mother did, from a very childhood. And so motherhood is the most wonderful, the most precious, the most creative, the most imaginative, most greatest poetry, the greatest art. Can anybody create an art? You can have a stone sculpture, Anthony Gormley or Henry Moore or somebody, but it's not living. Every mother is creating a living sculpture to bring this beautiful body, living body with imagination, creativity, soul, spirit, poetry, art, service, everything in this body. Mother is creating it. Mother the real sculptor. Mother the real artist. So I sing the songs of the praise to all mothers. Be a good mother. Give freedom to your child. Children come through you, not from you. So when the child is out in the world, give your love, give your care, as long as the child needs, but give them freedom. This is what related to you. Safety is not the primary concern. Difficulties are welcome. Problems are welcome. When children go through difficult time, they become stronger. If you put a little tree in a greenhouse, it will never be so strong. The tree has to be out in the field, under the storm, under the sun, under the rain, under all the kind of difficulties. Then the tree will be strong. So give your child that freedom. When the child is out there, they come through you but not from you. They have their own thoughts, they have their own destiny, they have their own creativity. Don't control it. So motherhood is wonderful, but good mother is mother who gives freedom to children.
Let's take a moment of silence. I mean, I feel like clapping, but I feel like being even more sacred and going into a deeper place of appreciating it and deepening our resolve to live these values, to be the change.
Yeah.
And so maybe we can take a minute of silence in that spirit. Thank you for co-creating this space this morning. Satishi, how can words thank you?
Thank you.
I will say thank you anyways. Just a minute of silence.